Good evening, everybody. This is Bill Flores, a congressman from Texas District 17, and we're having one of our periodic teletown hall meetings. We try to do these from time to time when we have a lot of news to report about what's happening in Washington. And so this seems like a good time, given all the things that are going on today. What we're going to do, we're going to try to wrap this call up in about an hour. So a little bit before 9 o'clock, we'll wrap the call up. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *3. Then at the end of the call, if you didn't get your question answered, please stay on the line, and you'll be able to leave a voicemail for us, and then we'll be able to get those calls in the next few days and to respond to your question. Again, press *3 to get in the queue. We're also going to ask you a poll about the things that are most important to you that are happening in the country today, and so stand by for that as well. We've done these polls in prior teletown halls, and people have asked us to give you the results, so we'll be sure and do that at the end of the call as well. I'm going to go ahead and start with, for those of you that have just joined, again, this is Bill Flores, a congressman from Texas District 17. We're having one of our periodic teletown hall meetings. We're calling into Brazos, Burleson, Lee, Milam, and Robertson counties tonight. The two big things that are on most people's minds around the country today are the border crisis on our southern border, and then also VA healthcare. Now, there are several other issues that are that we'll be able to talk about tonight, but I'm going to let your questions take us the direction you'd like to go. Again, press *3 to get in the queue. To address the border crisis first, the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has appointed a special task force to come up with a set of recommendations as to how to deal with the crisis on our southern border. And that task force has come up with about a dozen recommendations, and those are being put into legislative form right now. And then hopefully this week we're going to vote on this before Congress breaks for the August recess, or the August work period, actually. The first recommendation they've come up with is to deploy the National Guard to the southern border to assist our Border Patrol. The second recommendation is to prohibit the Secretary of the Interior and the Secretary of Agriculture from denying or restricting customs and border protection activities on federal land. What's happened in the past is that the Park Service and the Department of Agriculture have restricted Border Patrol agents from being able to pursue folks who have crossed the border illegally onto those public lands. And so this recommendation, and once it put into law, would prevent those two parts of the government from interfering with the ability of the Customs Service to be able to protect our border. It also requires that the Department of Homeland Security develop a strategy and an implementation plan to gain operational control of the southern border. Right now, all the Department of Homeland Security does is ask for billions of dollars, but it never tells us how they're actually going to achieve control of the border. This will set up a system so that before we fund them, that we'll know exactly what the money's going to. We'll know that there's a plan and not just a series of spending initiatives that they always come up with. The other thing we want to do is to actually find a way to measure the border security. And so what the recommendations include are the establishment of an independent third-party commission to develop border security goals and a means to accurately measure how our border security is versus those goals. So that's part of the establishment as well. We want to help Central American countries and Mexico secure their borders. To the extent we can help them secure their borders, then we have less pressure on our southern border as well. We need to establish repatriation centers in the originating countries like El Salvador, Guatemala, and the Honduras, so that when we send these children back to be reunited with their families, and that there will be a repatriation center in those countries. So that's better than doing it here, if you will. We need to have an aggressive messaging campaign, let's call it a public relations or an advertising campaign, in the countries from where these unaccompanied minors are coming, and in the U.S., to basically set the record straight as to what the law really says so that and to basically encourage these Central American families to not send their children north on this dangerous journey, because that they will be sent home. The folks that are, I'll tell you what the reason is that this crisis has come about in a minute. We also need to mandate that we detain all family units that are apprehended at the border, and our goal is to process those family units within 5 to 7 days, and generally to send them back to their home countries. We need to amend the Trafficking Victims Protection and Reauthorization Act of 2008 so that all unaccompanied minors are treated the same as those that come from Mexico for the purpose of removals. What's happened in the past, or one of the things that's causing the problem with the large numbers of children coming across the border and being allowed to stay on this side, is that if you're not from Canada and if you're not from Mexico, if you come north, under the Trafficking Act, you are allowed to stay in this country until your case is processed to determine if you've been trafficked or not. These children have been smuggled. They haven't been trafficked for the most part. And so the Trafficking Act should not apply to them. And so we need to amend the loophole that the Obama administration is using in the 2008 Trafficking Act. We need to deploy additional judge teams and temporary judges close to the border to expedite the hearing of asylum and credible fear claims. We need to have tough penalties on those that are engaged in human smuggling, including the smuggling of unaccompanied minors. We need to also help our domestic law enforcement operations, including state and local government, and in the originating countries, so that we can help to disrupt this transnational criminal organization of smugglers that has developed over the last few years. And then we'll pass strict laws against human smuggling. One of the things that the recommendations don't include is a provision to undo the president's deferred action memo from the summer of 2012. That's the reason this started. When the president said that he wasn't going to deport certain people, then some enterprising entrepreneurs in Central America started putting together business plans to smuggle unaccompanied minors to the United States, basically thinking that they would be given amnesty and free benefits from the taxpayers of the United States. We need to deal with that. This recommendation doesn't include that, dealing with DACA, as it's called. I've proposed to the leadership of the House, as well as to Kay Granger and the task force, that we at least have a separate vote on DACA as well to undo that president's activity. So that's the status of the dealing with the border crisis. My hope is that we'll have a vote on that in the House this week. I'm not certain. I can't guarantee that, but I think that's the direction we're moving, is to have that vote on Wednesday or Thursday of this week, so that we can begin to take positive efforts toward reunifying these children with their families and to secure our southern border. Moving to the second most important issue that seems to be on people's minds. By the way, again, if you have a thank you for joining our town hall. This is Bill Flores, the congressman from Texas District 17. If you'd like to get in the queue to ask a question, please press *3. Again, *3 to ask a question. Then the next issue that's on everybody's mind is what to do with veterans' health care. As you know, you've all heard the stories about some of the breakdowns in veterans' health care. Without going into the background of that, I want to talk about what we're doing to fix it. Each of the House and the Senate have passed individual bills to deal with this, to allow veterans who can't be treated in a timely manner, or who live more than 40 miles away from an existing VA facility, to be able to go in the private sector and see the healthcare provider of their choice. Those bills are slightly different, so because of that, each of the Senate and the House appointed conferees to a joint House-Senate conference committee to deal with the differences. I am one of the members of that conference committee. We've had a difficult time in resolving those differences, but as of yesterday afternoon, we've gotten about 99% of the differences resolved. We have one more little issue we're trying to deal with today, And my thinking is that in the next hour or so tonight, we're going to go down and sign the conference report, and then we will introduce it on the House floor for a vote later on this week. So I think we're going to button this up sometime before Thursday as well, so that we can start giving our veterans the health care that they deserve. Again, press star 3 if you have a question. Before we go into the questions, I would like to take a poll if we could. And the question for the poll is, what is the most important issue facing America today? And you're going to be able to vote with the keypad on your phone. Again, the question is, what is the most important issue facing facing America today? There are 7 choices. If you think it's jobs and the economy, please press 1. If you think it's spending and deficits, press 2. If you think it's presidential overreach, press 3. If you think it's immigration and border security, press 4. If you think it's Obamacare, press 5. If you think their veterans issues are the most important issue, press 6. If it's other, press 7. So again, the poll question is, what is the most important issue facing America today? And I'd ask you to vote. Jobs and economy, press 1. Spending and deficits, press 2. Presidential overreach, press 3. Immigration and border security, press 4. Obamacare, press 5. Veterans issues, press 6. And other, press 7. We will give you the results of the poll toward the end of this call. Again, for those of you that have just joined us, this is Bill Flores. We're hosting a Teletown Hall for Texas District 17. We're calling Brazos, Burleson, Lee, Milam, and Robertson counties tonight. So we're going to take our first question tonight. This comes from Leslie in College Station. Leslie, would you repeat your question, please?
My question was, what is being done, you know, what are plans and things actually being done to stem the flow of these kids from Central America? And I think you've already touched on that a little bit.
Right. Leslie, thanks for your question. What we've done is to working, we have greatly increased the resources available for the Border Patrol today. It's not enough to deal with the issues. So the recommendations of the task force include putting the National Guard on the border and providing more boots on the ground, if you will, to help our Border Patrol, to put more judicial resources down there so that we can have quicker hearings. Our thinking is, now the recommendation of the task force is to take the most recent group of youth that have come across the border, process them quickly, and then reunite them with their families back in their home countries. And I think by using that last in, first out sort of strategy, that these families will say, hey, I just paid $3,000 or $5,000 or $8,000 to send my child to the United States, and here they're coming back. And I think that will send a powerful message in each of these countries from where these children are coming. Now, as you know, I think everybody on this call knows, we're treating these children humanely. And we are a humane country, and we believe that we need to continue to treat the children humanely. But we also know that this is a humanitarian crisis. It's a health care crisis. It is causing a strain on Texas fiscal resources. It's also a border security crisis, and we need to deal with it aggressively. And so I think if we can get this legislation passed this week, that we'll take a positive first step toward reunifying these children with their families, and then also slow down the flow of them coming across. I'm going to go to Ed and Brian. Ed, can you repeat your question, please?
Hi, Bill. I was just curious to know if you're able to get this legislation passed to the House of Representatives for the border control and so forth. What are the odds of getting it passed to the Senate and getting the President to sign it?
Yeah, thanks for your question. I don't know. The political games that are played up here are pretty frustrating for everyday Americans, and believe it, you know, or not, it's frustrating to me. To me, this is a no-brainer. that what we're proposing, what the task force has proposed, when put in the legislative format, should be a slam dunk. But I don't know. I think the Senate should pass it, but then again, they may find a political reason to not do it. If the Senate does pass it, I think the president would likely sign it. I don't, because what you're going to when you have both bodies of Congress coming together to deal with this issue, that inherently means it's going to be bipartisan, and I think the president doesn't want to stand in the way of Congress' solution to this crisis that he created. So I hope the Senate would pass it. I'd hope they'd do it quickly. I'd hope the president would sign it, but I can't guarantee anything up here in this town except that things are all a little nutty. I'm going to go to Andrew in College Station. Andrew, can you repeat your question, please? Andrew, you're live.
Bill.
Yes, how are you doing?
I asked the same question. Harry Reid's not going to let anything pass the Senate. So it's almost a moot point for any kind of bill to be passed. And we've got our border people down there being fired on across the border of the Rio Grande with the cartel with their 50 caliber guns that shoot over a mile, and we can't do anything about it. What are we going to do about something like that?
Andrew, that's a good question, and that's the reason I think that the Senate may want to take this up. I can't guarantee it, but if the Senate leaves town for the August work period without doing something, I think there's going to be a political price to pay for Harry Reid and the people that did nothing, if you will, that took no action. And so I think that there's going to be the American people are pretty concerned about what's happening down the southern border. And I think that they're, I think if Harry Reid and his friends and the Senate are listening to the American people, he's going to be inclined to do something. So I think the House bill is a relatively common sense bill. Now, if we put DACA in it, in other words, undoing the president's deferred action memo of June of 2012, then that could cause the Senate to not do it. That's the reason I think we need to do that as a separate bill, so that at least the American people know the way we feel about the president's lawlessness on this immigration, on what he's done with immigration. But that probably wouldn't pass the Senate. But at least the American people can see the clear difference in those people that believe in border security and the rule of law versus those that don't. So I would hope that would encourage them to do this. Again, this is Bill Flores. I'm representing the Congressional District 17 from Texas, and we are having one of our periodic teletown halls. Please press *3 to get into the question queue. Again, *3 to get in the queue. If you don't get your question answered in this call, please stay on the line at the end, and we will give you a chance to leave us a voicemail, and we'll get back to you. We'll wrap this call up again about 9:45 or so, 8:45 or so. So that you can enjoy the rest of your evening. Let's go to, Gary. And Gary, you're live.
Yes, sir. We have a United States Marine that is being held in a Tijuana jail. He made a mistake. He crossed into Mexico with firearms in his vehicle that were all legal here. He served in Iraq and the other places. Is there anything that you can solicitate to help get him out? We give Mexico $50 million a year, and they can't, somebody makes a mistake. They've helped him down there for quite a long time now. We need to get him out if possible. And I don't think he really, he might have broke their laws, but he wasn't trying to. He was trying to get off that freeway and get turned around and couldn't do it.
Uh-huh. Gary, thanks for the question. Here's the deal. On Sergeant Tamarusi, when I first heard about this, I was pretty disappointed in Mexico myself about him being in prison. And so one of the things I did, I started an initiative to get all of the members in Congress from Texas. There are 36 of us, or actually 38 of us, two senators and 36 House members, on both sides of the aisle to sign a letter to the President of Mexico and to ask him to release this Marine. When I did that, one of my colleagues that that knows more of the story about this sergeant said, you probably ought to be briefed about this person first. And so I've had a briefing, and I found out that this is not the first time Sergeant Tamarucci had been over the border to Mexico. He's been over several times. He actually has a girlfriend in Mexico. So he knows where this exit is. The Mexican government has alleged that he has actually been gun running. And so given the evidence so far, it doesn't sound like he's as innocent as it sounds. Now, in our country, you're innocent until proven guilty. So I'm not saying he's guilty. I'm just saying that I think we've got to let the Mexican court system work its will on this case before we as Americans start doing it. Because, you know, we wouldn't like it if a person from Mexico came over and got put in jail, and then the Mexican government started telling us we needed to release the person, even though we had arrested this person because they had allegedly broken our laws. So that's the difficulty here. I do want to tell you, I did try to take action to have this bipartisan letter from all the members of the Texas delegation, all 38 of us, signed this letter to the President of Mexico. But after hearing what the apparent facts are in this case, we've decided to stand down and let the Mexican courts work its way. Now, I understand he's being treated better in jail than he was before, now that, you know, he's got several million Americans aware of what's going on down there. So I think we're going to have to let the courts work their way. But I do think, from what I understand, they are doing it on an expedited basis. So hopefully he can be tried and found innocent and come home. Or, we'll see what happens after that. Let's go to Carol and Cameron. Carol, would you repeat your question?
Yes, I would like to know, with this VA situation, are they going to stop giving bonuses to these administrative positions and use these funds for the veterans and not to pay out more bonuses?
Carol, that's a great question. And, you know, you reminded me, I never did go through what we were going to do with some of the other parts of the veterans bill. Yes, that's actually one of the ways we're paying for the extra money we're having to spend in order to allow our veterans to go outside the VA health care system or to create what we call the Veterans Choice Card. We're suspending bonuses to the VA leadership for the foreseeable, or to VA employees for the foreseeable future, until that organization can get its ducks in a row. The other thing that we've done that I didn't talk about is we want to have accountability of the federal employees in the VA. And so provisions of the VA bill that hopefully will be filed tonight will say that the Secretary of the VA has the authority to terminate low-performing senior employees on an accelerated basis, so that there's limited number of appeals, they don't get paid, they don't get bonuses or anything like that after they've been fired and or during the appeal process. So we're trying to hold the bureaucrats accountable for their lack of performance and for what they've done to our veterans if they're low performance. I think this will do two things. One is the people in the VA today that are committed to our veterans, and there are thousands of them, that go into work and do a great job taking care of our veterans every day, they'll feel like their work is worthwhile because hopefully they're going to be recognized for doing a good job, because right now they're getting the same pay and benefits of the people that were doing a poor job. And I think they'll feel better if they see the low performers losing their jobs, because they'll feel like the VA is really trying to turn the corner. And that's to provide the best health care anywhere for our veterans. I do really think that this bill does set up the future transition to what I call the VA of the 21st century. As you may know, the VA today is the nation's second largest bureaucracy with about 330,000+ employees. Large federal bureaucracies are not known for responsiveness and customer service and things like that. Now, there's some parts of the VA, again, are doing well, but lots of employees in the VA are doing well, but we've got too much bureaucracy that's holding them back. And so I think we need to look at what that VA looks like. And the VA has centers of excellence in areas like traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress syndrome or PTSD, crush injuries, burn injuries, amputations, prosthetics, polytrauma type situations. And I can see, one of the policy outcomes of this could be that the VA winds up being smaller and slimmer and more agile and focuses on those areas of those centers of excellence where it working with a DOD gives the best health care anywhere. And then for everything else, you give a veteran's choice card to those veterans, and they go out and get the health care that they want in their local community. And I think that I don't know that this is for sure this is the direction we're going to go, but it does seem like a direction it could go. And I think at the end of the day, we'll have a situation where our veterans are getting better health care of a higher quality that is executed more quickly, and that the taxpayers will feel better about the investment they're making into our veterans instead of making investment into a bureaucracy. So I'm hopeful that that's the way that things will go, and I appreciate the question. Again, press *3 to get in the queue, *3. And then and a couple more questions. We're going to ask our poll question again tonight, and we'll move forward. Bill and Brian, can you repeat your question, please?
Sure. I was listening to the poll questions, and they all kind of came down to President Obama's either, disregarding the Constitution or writing his own laws. What can be done and what is being done to combat this in the House?
Okay. Oh, I appreciate the question, Bill. The let me just give you a list of some of the things that are frustrating me, because I know they frustrate Americans from all over Texas and all over the country, and because people come to me and say, what can we do about this president? And then I'm going to tell you what the responses are, but some of the things that have happened, you've got Fast and Furious, which had the gun running of federal bureaucrats in New Mexico, the IRS targeting of conservative groups, the loss of the emails and the destruction of data by the IRS and the EPA, now we find out, numerous unlawful breaches of the original Obamacare law with delays and waivers and things like that, the incompetence that's been shown in the rollout of the website, the exchanges, the enrollment reporting, the Benghazi attack, well, the whole foreign affairs mess that we've got today, foreign policy failures in Iraq, Libya, Syria, Russia, Ukraine, the relationship with Israel. And if you look at Libya, for instance, the breakdown in Libya, which this president caused, led to the destabilized environment where we had the attack on the Benghazi consulate, and we lost 4 good Americans in that. And then that we have a cover-up of the Benghazi attack, and we still can't get answers on that. Then you have you've got the VA failures, and then I think the president, in order to try to change the channel from the VA failures, decided to do the prisoner swap for Bo Bergdahl. And then, so he released 5 Taliban terrorists and didn't inform Congress pursuant to the law. So that's another issue we've got to deal with. He had unconstitutional appointments to the National Labor Relations Board and the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. And then the Supreme Court recognized that those were unlawful, and he's had 2 9-0 decisions against him from the Supreme Court. And then targeting media personnel in violation of the First Amendment. So you've got a long laundry list of things where the American people and Congress are frustrated with this president. The question is, what do you do about it? That was your question. And I think if you look at the Constitution, The founders, I don't think, ever envisioned that you'd have a situation like this, where you have a lawless president that views the Constitution as irrelevant and views Congress as an inconvenience, and then who will not even enforce his own laws or the laws from prior that were signed by prior presidents. The only remedy, and it's not really a remedy, it's a punishment in the Constitution, is impeachment. There's no other remedy to deal with this situation where one part of Congress says, hey, quit violating the Constitution, quit breaking the law, and then you've got another part of Congress, the Senate, that says, you know, we're not going to stop you. And that, I just don't think our founders ever envisioned that you'd have one part of Congress that wouldn't be part of a cohesive congressional effort to uphold the constitutional rights that Congress has under Article 1 of the Constitution. So when you look at impeachment, you look at first of all, you look at Article 2, Section 4, and you say, what is it that a president can be impeached for? And it said they can be removed from office on impeachment and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. So then you have to look at the process. To look at the process, you go to Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5. And there it says the House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. So that means the House will start the process. And then you look at the next step, and that's Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6. And it says the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. So that means that you got to have 67 senators. You'd probably get 218 votes in the House to impeach the president if you were to introduce that resolution today. But there's no way that the Senate is going to get 67 people to convict the president. Now, the president today is highly unpopular, and the whole impeachment process would not play out well in the media for the folks in the House that decide to go that direction. The media tends to tolerate this president. They tend to support him whatever they can. Now, they're not happy with him today, but if the House decides to impeach him, and again, remember, impeachment only works if you convict in the Senate. If impeachment fails, either in the House or in the Senate, there's going to be the president will use that to his advantage to try to make himself look like he's been picked on by Congress, and suddenly you'll have the same Bill Clinton effect. Bill Clinton was more popular after impeachment than he was before, and that's the only evidence we have that to go on in recent history is what happened with Bill Clinton. He didn't get convicted, and the House lost. You know, the majority in the House got smaller because of them trying to go down that trail. Now, so that takes us, what's the alternative if there's no other constitutional remedy? Well, we do have some remedies, and that is we can file a lawsuit against the president to try to get him to follow the law. And that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to have a resolution on the floor of the House to file a lawsuit against the president for failure to follow the law. And it'll start in a, just like any other lawsuit, it'll start in a federal district court, and then it'll work up through the appeals court, and then ultimately it'll be in the Supreme Court. In the past, these types of litigation have failed, but they failed because you'd only have one or a number of House members or of members of Congress that would be the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. In this case, you're going to have the entire House of Representatives voting on this, so you'll have an authorized action by the House to file litigation against the president. So I think we're going to have standing. I have visited with the lawyers who have crafted this strategy. I think it will be successful. Now, how long will it take to have the trials and so forth, I don't know. But it's really the only thing we can do if the Senate's not going to stand up to protect the rights of Congress under Article 1. Otherwise, you know, you've essentially got a situation where you've got somebody that's acting as a king, and that's not what the founders envisioned. So all I can say is stay tuned, and I hope that we'll get there. I'm going to go to Kevin in College Station. Kevin, would you repeat your question, please?
First of all, I just want to compliment you, Bill, on I listen to you weekly on the radio show, and appreciate your service, and, you know, I think you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
I was just curious if there's any chance that I see that there was some movement in the House on the depreciation issues, and wondered if there's any chance of getting any kind of extenders bill passed before the end of the year.
Kevin, that's one of the $40,000 questions around here. I will tell you this. With respect to Section 1, I think when your call was screened, you asked about Section 179 depreciation. Most of us in the House agree that we need to address that is one of the critical extenders that needs to be passed. And we did pass a permanent extension of that depreciation model, those Section 179 deductions, back earlier this month. We had a bipartisan vote of 258 Democrats and Republicans that voted yes for this. There were 160 that voted no. So now the question is, will the Senate take it up? I don't think the Senate will take it up between now and Election Day, but I think the Senate would probably take it up and pass it in a lame duck session. So sometime between November the 5th and the end of the year, I think this and some other extenders will be considered by the Senate and passed. At least that's my hope. I think longer term, what we've been trying to focus on in the House is what do we do with the tax code? I think most Americans, if you ask them if the tax code is broken, they'll say absolutely it's broken. If you ask them if we should have tax reform, they'll say yes, we should have tax reform. And so one of the things that I'm hoping that we can get done, if not in this Congress, then in the next Congress, is comprehensive tax reform, where we have a much simpler, flatter system that pulls the loopholes out and has lower rates, so you have a broader base, and you have a lot less compliance time, and a lot less time spent trying to do your taxes, and also one that's more competitive. For instance, the president gave this silly speech last week about economic patriotism. Well, if he wants to have economic patriotism, he would be sitting down with members of Congress that know the tax code, like me. I'm a CPA, and we can walk through the way to have economic patriotism is to have a competitive tax system. We've got some of the highest tax rates in the world, and if we want to keep businesses here, then we ought to have a competitive tax system. So I think we need to do that not only on the corporate side, we need to do it on the individual side. And if we do that, that's the single biggest thing we could do today that would cause greater economic growth than what we're having today. Today's recovery is the slowest that we've had in of any economic recovery. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Most of them are because of the headwinds blowing out of Washington and the heavy regulatory regime that's been imposed the last 5 years on the American economy. But I think if we could fix the tax code, reform the tax code, and fix this regulatory regime that we've got up here that's out of control, I think the economy would just explode. And there's nothing like more jobs and better paychecks to cure a lot of economic ills. And so that's the direction that I hope we go, Kevin. I want to go ahead and run the poll again real quick. If you have just joined the call, this is Bill Flores, the congressman from Texas District 17. We're having one of our periodic teletown halls. The question is, what do you consider the most important issue facing America today? Again, what is the most important issue facing America today? And I'd like to ask you to vote with your phone. The answers are, if you think it's jobs in the economy, press 1. And I'm going to go through these twice, so just stand by. Jobs in the economy, press 1. Spending and deficits, press 2. Presidential overreach, press 3. Immigration and border security, press 4. Obamacare, press 5. Veterans issues, 6. And others, 7. So here are the answers again. Jobs in the economy, 1. Spending and deficits, press 2. Presidential overreach, press 3. Immigration and border security, press 4. Obamacare, press 5. Veterans issues, press 6. And other, press 7. So with that, and we'll give you the results before the end of the call. I'm going to go to Jerry and Brian. Jerry, would you repeat your question?
I sure will, Bill. As a veteran and mother of a veteran and a wife of a veteran, can you tell me what percentage, you know, as you talked about, there were some things that they couldn't, you guys couldn't agree on, that in an hour we may have things agreed on. What are you guys having a hard time agreeing on when it comes to our veterans? Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jerry. The one hang-up issue right now is, first of all the language had been agreed as of Sunday afternoon. We had a conference call on about 1:30 on Sunday, and everybody was okay. And actually, in this case, one of the Republican senators that's a member of the conference committee stuck his hand up about 3 hours ago and said, well, you know, I want to make a change. So we're going to wind up spending about $10 billion for this Veterans Choice Care Card. And he wants to make sure that $10 billion only goes to the Veterans Choice Program and is not used within the current VA for any of the current programs. He's got a point, but we've already got language in the bill that says that the money is directed only to the Choice Care Program. And I think he's just wanting sort of what I'd call belt suspenders type language to say, okay, you've got a prohibition about how it can be used. But I think we've got that. If you say what it can be used for, then basically that says you can't use it for anything else. So I think, you know, we're just going to have to sit down and do some arm twisting with this one particular senator. And I understand what he's trying to say, but I think I think we're covered in terms of the language. And so I'm hopeful that you're going to see us introduce this on the floor within the next couple of hours tonight. So, Jerry, stay tuned. I think we'll get there. This particular senator is a reasonable person. He has been a value contributor to the conversations we've had in the House-Senate conference. So I think it's going to be okay. All right. Let's go to Caroline in College Station. Caroline, can you repeat your question?
Yes, I received in the mail a citizen petition to reverse Roe v. Wade, and it is talking about a Life at Conception Act. What can you tell me about that?
Okay. Caroline, first of all, let me tell you what my beliefs are. My belief is that life starts at conception, and it extends until natural death. And I think that all the laws of the United States should recognize that. And I also think that no money from any taxpayer should be spent in contravention of that belief. I'll get one of our legislative team guys to look at that Life Against a Conception Act real quickly, and I'll have an answer for you later on this call. If you had something like that on the floor, I would be glad to co-sponsor it. I would be glad to vote for it. But I don't have I don't know if that legislation's actually been introduced. But I'll find out in the next few minutes and give you an answer. If that's the case, Andre, would you make sure somebody's working on it? Okay. Let's go to Michelle in College Station. Michelle, can you repeat your question?
Yes. What should we individually be doing that will actually make a difference? The corruption in our government is extremely evident. Bill, you can't do it alone. I've heard of people getting guns and storing food because they are really getting scared. And we can't, you know, individually, we can't pass bills, and apparently neither can you.
Right.
I just don't know what you can do to change the tide of what's happening on Washington.
Right. Michelle, I think you're not only your question, and I can sense the frustration coming through the phone, and I want to say I'm with you. When I talk to folks back home, and I go home every weekend, as you probably know, I talk to people at the Lowe's Hardware or at Walmart, and they're frustrated with what's going on in Washington. And I'd say, look, I'm just as frustrated. You know, we're up here in the House working our tails off, producing what I call real-world legislation to deal with real-world issues so that we can get Main Street back on its feet and so that we can have the rule of law and have the Constitution upheld. And on the other hand, you've got a Senate that doesn't believe the same thing, and you've got a lawless administration. What here's my response to you. First of all, I still think we've got a, you know, a great country. I still think it's the greatest country on earth. I think we've got a constitution that will weather this mess that we have today. But there are a couple of things that we need to do. One is I'd ask everybody to continue praying for their country, and then to pray for its leaders, and then to encourage their leaders to do the right thing. Or if you think that a leader's going the wrong way, then to encourage that leader to change their direction. And so I know I get, we have several thousand contacts a week of people calling us and saying, hey, we want you to do this or don't do this. And so stay engaged. And then if you have a you know, let's say there's a person in Nevada that you don't think's doing their job, well, then you could, you know, you go to Nevada and get involved in trying to find somebody to replace that person, or Texas, wherever. You know, I think one of the things that will happen is the American people are pretty frustrated, and I think that's going to show up in what happens in the Senate in November. And then I think, you know, I'm not going to say life's going to be perfect after that, but it'll certainly be a lot better if we don't have to deal with Harry Reid, who's blocked the 333 jobs bills that we've sent over from the House. And again, this is common sense type legislation, but it's just frustrating to deal with Harry Reid and his gang over there. Back to the question that was asked earlier about the Life at Conception Act. This is actually H.R. 1091. It's called the Life at Conception Act. It declares that the right to life guaranteed by the Constitution is vested in each human being beginning at the moment of fertilization, cloning, or other moment at which an individual comes into being. And it prohibits construing this act to authorize the prosecution of any woman for the death of her unborn child. This was introduced by Jim Jordan of Ohio, and I am one of the 132 co-sponsors of this bill. There is a similar bill in the House, in the Senate. It's S-583, and right now this bill is in committee. This would be something that, and believe it or not, this bill would have probably some bipartisan support. Not very many Democrats would be on it, but you'd have most Republicans and a handful of Democrats. So, hopefully we'll see something like that cross the House floor this year. If it doesn't pass this year, I'm sure that Jim Jordan or somebody like him will introduce it again next year. I will co-sponsor it again. And then if we have a better Senate environment, better Senate leadership in the next Congress, then it would probably pass. Let's talk to Gerald and Lyons. Gerald, would you repeat your question, please?
Yeah, I wanted to know, do you still support and do you still co-sponsor of the H.R. 25, the fair tax?
Yes, Gerald. Actually, I do. I am still a co-sponsor. And when you know, if you go back about three or four questions when we were talking about comprehensive tax reform, to me, we need to scrap the IRS. We need to scrap the current tax code altogether and start over. And I think the fair tax would be the perfect way to do that. Rob Woodall introduces, he and I got elected at the same time back in 2010, and he introduces that bill every Congress, and I co-sponsor it with him at every Congress. And I just think that the issue we have to, and I hope that we see it pass someday. The issue that we have today is if you do a wholesale change in the tax code today from what we have in our current broken system to a new system, that I think it would be pretty disruptive to the economy. And so I think the better thing to do is to reform the current system, let the economy begin to grow again and stabilize, and once people are comfortable that there's less uncertainty in the economy. And I think most people think there's lots of uncertainty in the economy today. Once they feel that there's less uncertainty, then I think that you can put in the fair tax, as a introduce the fair tax, and then put in, let's say, a 5 to 10 year phase in where the fair tax phases in over a certain period of time and the current tax code phases out. And if you did that, then that gives families and businesses a chance to adjust to it a little bit at a time. One of the things I've seen in the past are when you have big changes in the tax code in the past is you have economic dislocations where Congress fails to see what a change in the tax code does to the economy. We saw real estate kind of crash back in the 80s because of this, because of some real estate tax shelters went away. And so I think we need to be very careful with this and have a sort of five to 10 year phase in, and then make sure that you kill the income tax amendment in the Constitution so that the income tax cannot rise again from the dead. That's the way I think that we need to do it. It will probably take some time. We're coming up on about 1 hour since we started the call. I'm going to take two more questions. We'll do one more poll, and then we'll wrap up this evening. Like to talk to Larry in Caldwell. Larry, would you repeat your question?
Yes. If there's not already a law on the books for about federal employees' bonuses, and I have Lois Lerner on my mind and people like that, and the VA people, they should not be able to get those great big bonuses like I've heard about in the news. And the second thing is, we need if there's a law there that limits that, okay. If there's not one, we need one. And they should not be able to get their retirement if they've done something illegal while they was holding that office. To me,
right, Larry, I fully agree with you. We actually in the VA bill that we have, first of all, we've stopped the bonuses for the foreseeable future until the VA gets its ducks in a row. The second thing is that if you are an employee who has been terminated because of poor performance under these new easier termination standards, then you are not eligible for any bonus or any pay or anything like that. And if it were up to me, I'd say you wouldn't get your retirement would be haircut as well. Lois Lerner's behavior just sticks in my throat, and I'm sure it does in most Americans' minds. I mean, she caused the targeting in the IRS. She broke the laws. She broke the rules of the IRS. She destroyed evidence. I can't wait for the day to see her in jail. Now, I'm not supposed to convict anybody like this. She's still innocent until proven guilty, but I think someday she's going to be proven guilty of the crimes that she committed, if not at least the cover-up. But there's no way that she should be getting any benefit from the taxpayer of this country. And, I like your idea. We'll look and see if there's any legislation that's been introduced to do away with the bonuses and the salary and haircut the retirement and so forth. If there hasn't, we'll introduce that. I think that's a great idea. I'd like to take one more poll question, and then I'm going to take one question after that, and then we'll wrap this call up as we've been going right at a little over an hour. What's the most important issue facing America today? Is it jobs and the economy? Press 1. Spending and deficits? Press 2. Presidential overreach? 3. Immigration and border security? Press 4. Obamacare? Press 5. Veterans issues, press 6, another, press 7. Again, jobs and the economy, 1, spending and deficits, 2, presidential overreach, 3, immigration and border security, 4, Obamacare, 5, veterans issues, 6, and other is number 7. At the conclusion of the call tonight, if you haven't gotten your question answered, please stay on the call, and you'll be able to leave a voicemail and state what your question is, and we'll be able to get back with you after that. So I'm going to take, but you'll have to stay on till the conclusion of the call in order to be able to do that. Why don't we go to Phyllis and Hearn. Phyllis, would you repeat your question?
Hi, Bill. This is Phyllis. My question was that on your questionnaire, you needed to have 8 because all the issues that you bring up are vital and a big concern to most of the people in our district and I think throughout the country. I had a hard time deciding which one I wanted to vote for, and I would have voted for all. So
okay.
I'd like to have the option at the end for other people to do the same thing, is to put in an 8 that would say everything you brought up is of concern.
Okay. Phyllis, I like that idea. We'll do that in the next Teletown Hall. I didn't even think about that. That makes sense. I'm going to go ahead and we'll take one more question. Why don't we let's go to
Joyce in College Station. Joyce, can you repeat your question, please?
Yes. We have had a long-term problem in the United States with illegal immigrants coming to the United States and giving birth to United States citizens. And I think that these babies should have the same status as their parents. I think it just exacerbates the problem with it the way it is. Is there a chance that that can be changed?
Joyce, it can't be changed in this Congress because I don't think the Senate would go for something like that. What we're trying to, I mean, the question is about anchor babies. And under, under one of the amendments following the Civil War, it was some of the former slaves had difficulty proving their birth, and so I mean their citizenship because there were no birth records, and so under the amendment they were given citizenship if they said they were born here, and so that law that amendment has been expanded beyond its original intent to allow somebody to. You know, you could essentially fly in here, land in Bryan College Station, go to the hospital, have your baby, and then fly home, and that baby is a United States citizen. That's inappropriate. We shouldn't have anchor babies. And so we don't have to amend the Constitution to fix this. We can actually fix it statute by saying, in order for the amendment to be applicable and that you have a U.S. citizen baby, you have to not only be in the country, number one, but number two, you've got to have a connection with the country. You've got to be, one of the parents has to be a U.S. citizen or something like that, but you've got to have a connection to the country versus just coming in to have your baby or crossing the border illegally and being here illegally and then having your baby. And then I think if we do that, we can stop the anchor baby problem, because the real problem with the anchor baby issue is that then everybody associated with that baby that's a U.S. citizen starts to try to claim a fast track toward legal status, and we've got to close that loophole. It's not being used, that the amendment is not being used as intended. With that, we're going to conclude our call. Let me give you the results of the poll. The poll question was, what do you consider to be the most important issue facing America today? The number one issue was presidential overreach with 29% of the vote. The number two issue was immigration and border security with 19% of the vote. Spending and deficits was next with 18%. The next issue was jobs and economy with 12%. Obamacare had 10%. Other had 9%, veterans issues had 4%. So that's the way the votes broke down. Again, presidential overreach was number one with 29%, immigration and border security were number two, and then with 19%, and spending and deficits were number three with 18%. One of the things that's interesting, jobs and economy was 12%, it was number four. If we were having the same Teletown Hall meeting in Ohio or Illinois, jobs in the economy would be a lot higher than it is. But we are all fortunate folks that get to live in Texas, and the economy is doing better in Texas because we in Texas get the right balance of having a right tax structure and right regulatory structure, and recognizing that there's nothing like more jobs and better paychecks to solve most of society's issues. We still have a great country, as I said earlier. I'd ask each of you to continue praying for it and praying for our military men and women that protect us from overseas threats, and pray for our first responders that protect us from threats here at home. And thank you. God bless you, and good night.